On this episode of Cox Talking Gamecocks, I give a football season retrospective, review this past week in Gamecock Athletics, give my six-pack of picks, and also some college football notes. Okay, here we go. Welcome to episode 24 of Cox Talking Gamecocks. I am your host, Tim Cox, where I will keep every episode from 1801 to 2001. And happy December, Gamecock fans. It is the holiday season. It is the most wonderful time of the year. And I'm already with a void in my soul without Gamecock football. I mean, it's funny. I listen to a few minutes of each episode, a little bit of a quality assurance, if you will, trying to make this, you know, a real industrial operation, right? Trying to make every episode as best I can. And I can just tell how sad I was last episode. I mean, I was depressed listening to that. And like, I listened to it at like a day or two later just because I couldn't even bear it. But so if y'all made it through that whole last episode after the team from the upstate, you know, handled us, you know, God bless you. I really do appreciate every one of you listening, but my goodness, I don't know. I guess that's just life as a Gamecock fan sometimes. Well, maybe these few weeks before the bowl game, it'll be good for my mental health, my physical health, and all of our health. So let's just be grateful for that. And God, love the Gamecocks. So what I'm going to do this episode is I'm going to give a retrospective, sort of a look back on the regular season, because obviously now we are done with football regular season. We do have our bowl game to look ahead of, but we don't know who that is as of now. So I'm going to give a retrospective there. But as always, before we do that, let's give a week in review as to this past week in Gamecock Athletics elsewhere. Starting off with women's volleyball made the NCAA tournament. So that is two different Gamecock teams that we have recently making the NCAA tournament. That is very impressive. Great job, ladies. They are playing Western Kentucky Friday at 4:30 p.m. in Atlanta. I don't know anything about Western Kentucky volleyball, but I am willing to bet that South Carolina should win and is probably more talented, and I just know we're going to win. Know it in my heart. Actually, and I'm pretty sure Gamecock volley, I'm pretty sure they had a nice season. I forget who it was that they beat. There was some team that had some streak against us. It might have been Kentucky. They broke some streak. It was at home. Looked absolutely electric. So great job and great season. Keep the good times rolling, ladies. Women's basketball here. So quick review on Monday. It was just a decimation of North Carolina A&T 79-42. Led by one of the most remarkable stat lines you're going to ever hear. Men's basketball, women's basketball, horse basketball, I don't care. Aaliyah Boston with 29 points. Listen to this. Perfect 13 for 13 of shooting. Perfect. 100%. Unreal. Coupled that with 14 rebounds. Talk about a double-double. My gosh, I'm shipping up to Boston all day. Aaliyah, way to go, killing the game. Cardoza, the big-time transfer, she also brought that up with 8 points and five rebounds. Just a rebounding clinic from the Gamecocks. Just absolutely imposing our will. This squad is something else. Now, their upcoming game is Friday at 7 p.m. That's at home in Colonial Life against Kansas State. So that's actually part of an SEC Big 12 challenge. Kansas State is sneakily 7-1, but they're not ranked. I didn't do too much of a deep dive into their schedule, but I mean, you're not 7-1 and not ranked for no reason. You probably have played some bunk-ass schools. So looking and expecting and hoping that South Carolina will be as dominant as ever. And as good as we are, it feels like we play very well at home. Dawn Staley has done an incredible job building our fan base, and it's just regularly packed at Colonial Life. So I fully expect that game to be rocking. And also the kids are back from Thanksgiving break, so student section should be rocking there. Zaya Cook, here's a fun note for y'all. She's 9 points away from hitting 1,000 career points. So let's go. Let's get that done. Let's get it done Friday night at home. Let's go, ladies. I know you'll handle business there. Let's go, Cox. Shifting gears and shifting tones and shifting moods to men's basketball. They lost on Wednesday to Coastal Carolina 80-56. Now, disclaimer, I guess. Jermaine Cousinard, he was out for that game, and he's the leader of the team. I think that's undisputed. We kind of knew that going in, but undisputed. Freshman Jacoby Wright, he started in his place, put up 11 points, but Keyshawn Bryant with 6 points, A.J. Lawson with 4. Those are two veteran guys combining for 10 points. I think Coastal had something like 25 fast break points, and this is just a tough loss, man. I mean, if you watched any of that game, I mean, Coastal's gym, it was at Coastal. Their gym is so tiny. That's not like there's a home court advantage. Like, their gym is probably as big as your bedroom. I don't even know how big your bedroom is, but that's like the gym size. And I understand this is a new group of guys. There's transfers and young guys. There's no Cousinard. But, I mean, we've seen this before where there's just early non-conference bad losses from Frank Martin. I said that against Princeton, but then turns out Princeton was actually pretty good. I spoke out of turn. Coastal's not that. Coastal is ass. So there's this weird pattern. I understand we're still 5-2, but you got to find a way to snap out of this. You got to find a way to play. Like, just because Cousinard is out, that should not result in a blowout loss. Like, it's one thing to keep it close. This was not that. I don't know what to say. Now, their next game, it is at home. I believe it is Sunday against Georgetown. The Hoyas, they're 3-3, but this is their first true road game. So let's hope that we can also have the student section rocking there and everyone else be rocking to provide that home court advantage. And it's Patrick Ewing. He's their coach, right? Patrick Ewing versus Frank Martin. I mean, two great basketball minds, regardless of what you think of Frank, he is. And Ewing, obviously, a very esteemed career. But that would be an amazing cage match. Like, screw a basketball game, man. Let's get those two in the ring. That would sell out Colonial Life. That might sell out Willie B. Let's make that happen. We'll do it for charity, right? Pick a charity, and we'll do it. Patrick versus Frank. I'm in. I'll be front row. I'll promote it. I'll promote it on the pod. I don't care. All right, but let's go, boys. We got it. We got to snap out of this. A big win against Georgetown would say a lot. But so with that, that is the updates. I am excited to be following these teams closer, but since we have a little bit of time left with football season, I'm just going to hold on for dear life for as much football as I can. So now that this last weekend, it has passed, I feel like we can look at this season, look back with a clearer lens. And I think you have to start from the very beginning, right? I mean, here comes Shane Beamer. There were some people who weren't sure about his hire, new head coach, everything like that. But as I talked about at the midseason retrospective, the program was in shambles, man. I mean, there was just very little reason for optimism, very little reason for hope. And it became clear after Muschamp was let go, and it became clearer through the hiring process and then more even through this season, that there was a big culture issue. And when you lose a locker room, or where you have a couple of bad apples, not saying that there was any, but this is just a what if. When that happens in college football, that's what gets coaches fired. You can be the smartest guy in the room. You can be a great recruiter. But if you don't have a locker room that believes in what you're saying, or if you have guys that are not willing to go and lay their bodies on the line for the guy next to them in their own locker room, that's a problem. And it was evident that that's what happened. So Shane Beamer comes in. A lot of unknowns. And I mean, you really got to look at this season, and it really is a roller coaster. I mean, you start climbing like chuck, 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 and you have 2 straight wins. We're feeling good. And then you go down with 2 straight losses. And then it was literally this like a roller coaster, up and down, with every other game being wins, lost, wins, lost. And it felt like every win, we were feeling high, every low, we're feeling down. But I think, and this speaks to the culture that Shane Beamer has created and hopefully will continue to cultivate is something that can't be understated, is this team's ability to fight through adversity. I mean, there were a couple of impressive come-from-behind wins. Sure, give me the argument, well, they shouldn't have been come-from-behind. Guess what? That's just football. That's sports, right? ECU, Troy, and Vanderbilt come to mind. And at the time of the Vanderbilt win, I was like, this should never have been that close. This was as close of a low as a Carolina fan we could have been had that game gone poorly. But when you take a step back and think about it, like, that game was just not going well. We can point fingers all we want, but the team stayed in it. The team didn't give up the back-breaking score to put us out of it. The team didn't pack it in. The coaches didn't just put out the second stringers. Like, yeah, you brought in Zeb and you had some magic. And you saw the team was rallying around each other. You saw that they were not going to allow this to happen. And on top of it, the fans were starting to leave. The fans were dejected. People were saying, just screw this, I'm going to go to the fair. And they battled. And they got that win. And they did not allow that streak to die. And they got their coach their first SEC win. And I think that win, when you look at it from a different lens, sort of encapsulates the spirit of this team. That it wasn't pretty. That it took a little spark. That it took a couple of breaks. And one unit was largely outperforming the other, but then right when you needed them, the other unit steps up, but they stayed focused and they stayed with their heads down and they worked and they did it for each other and they celebrated like hell. And I think that is what we're seeing build. And I mean, more of this adversity they fought through. The team had three different quarterbacks, for crying out loud. I mean, yeah, because of injury and whatnot, but if a team loses their quarterback, sometimes that's it for their season. Like, they don't respond to the backup. The backup is not prepared. That was not the case. This team responded to the leadership from three different quarterbacks with three different skill sets, with three different knowledges. Like, it's crazy. Not many teams, I think, could be able to do that. And again, that is a testament to the culture and to the work that these coaches have put in. And I mean, look, this team, it's far from perfect. And our imperfections and our lack of depth with a rookie head coach, like, it reared its head at times. But we did not let that define this season. It would have been easy for Beamer to chalk this year up as a rebuilding year and make excuses, right? He could have said, like, yeah, like, these guys left. You know, we don't have a lot of depth. Like, it's hard to go against this competition. Like, he didn't do that, right? In fact, he did the opposite. He took on the challenge that was presented to him with gusto. And he took a group of kids who had been playing for the name on the back of their jerseys and turned them into a group of men playing for the name on the front. And look, I'm not sure what's in store for his tenure at Carolina. I mean, anytime a new coach starts in college, it's more or less a crapshoot, like, how that tenure is going to turn out. But I believe that we have our guy, and I believe that he is home. So my biggest surprise of the season, we're going to do like little accolades here now. My biggest surprise of the season is the defense. I mean, 24 points allowed per game on average is bananas. Clayton White, that 4-2-5 scheme, it was more attacking, a lot of man-to-man coverage. Guys were flying to the ball. They were playing loose, seemed to be enjoying themselves more. And it was just a big surprise from a group that had underperformed in years past with arguably better talent, guys that went to the NFL, right? And a lot of people thought that this would be the weak team, the weak part of the team going into the year. And my MVP on the defense is none other than Jalen Foster. He was just named to first team All-SEC, as he should be. 90 tackles, 5 interceptions. I mean, wasn't it that streak? He was like 3-4, or was it even 5? Like, all in a row, his picks, all those games in a row? Like, bananas. Like, his play alone kept us in some games at times. And not just the picks, but the strong tackling, flying to the ball. And if you don't know his story, look it up and watch it. This kid deserves everything that is coming to him. Way to go, Jalen. Now, the offensive MVP I have is Josh Van. And say it with me again, folks. Get in the van, because this kid is going places. 679 receiving yards, also with 5 touchdowns. But to me, You know, his biggest impact was how he stepped up and he played at a whole different level that we hadn't even seen a glimpse of in the past. And I truly believe that because of Josh, we had a legitimate playmaker out wide who he could either take you deep or he could gash you on a slant route, and he commanded the respect of every defense we played with, which also allowed these three different quarterbacks, it allowed them to have a foundation, a safe place to throw the ball to, a steady eddy, if you will. And, I mean, no one knew what that wide receiver room was going to look like coming into this year. It was question mark after question mark because you had nothing to base it on. It was like, oh my God, this is not good, and we're thin. We don't have any depth. Josh Van stepped up to a true number one wideout and made life a lot easier for that offense. And I don't know what his plans are. I think because of the weird, wacky COVID eligibility year, I think he has another year. Selfishly, I want him in the Garnet and Black, but I hope and wish him nothing but the best, of course, moving forward. And I mean, we can't bring up the offense without talking about the offensive coordinator situation, Marcus Satterfield. Now, as I'm recording this, he is still the OC. A lot of people are impatient. A lot of people are looking for a move to be made. I mean, myself included. I mean, even if that move is an announcement of there are going to be no staff changes. But the argument for, I guess, keeping him would be that you have a first-year head coach with a team that largely overperformed expectations. If you get rid of an OC after 1 year, you're sending a message to any potential candidates that you don't have much of a margin for error, at least at how it could be interpreted. Now, from my perspective, I think it was just evident that what he was bringing was not translating to the team. Like, his system, albeit maybe one built for with more depth, then you could argue that we could have better depth next year through the portal and recruiting. Like, you could say, oh, well, it'll work then. But it just still felt like the team was disjointed at times and there were silly little penalties, which, I mean, that boils down to communication and how you coach. And I understand it'd be kind of a lot to do that with 1 year under Shane Beamer's belt. But I think if he does it, it says, hey, we're also going to hold you accountable here too. And I think you can also, if you're interviewing a guy, explain, be like, that just didn't work out. Like, I don't want to have turnover. So we'll have to wait and see on that. Hopefully there are some changes, but who knows. But my unsung hero of the year here is Luke Day, the strength and conditioning coach. And at the time, he might not have been a sexy hire. I mean, there were people saying, get the guy from Oregon, get the guy from Texas. But clearly, he was the right hire. And I didn't want to say anything during the season, you know, didn't want to jinx anything or anything like that. But this past year, it feels like it was the healthiest the Gamecocks have been in multiple years. I mean, yes, a couple guys got banged up, right? Wanham, Dickerson, I mean, Sherrod Green, he got rolled up on mid-game. Can't really do much about that. Luke, he had a freak practice accident. But overall, this team was healthy from game to game, which was critical because we were so thin. And it really helped us stay afloat. So overall for this season, you know, I am incredibly proud of what this team was able to accomplish with getting to the 6 wins and getting to a bowl. I think the last 2 years before this season, it killed a lot of the enthusiasm that fans had for the program. But this year, it felt like a renaissance for many of us. And that is a credit to every single person in that program. And look, of course, there were times where we were upset. Of course, there are times where we can look back and say, what if, or, oh, that should have been. But that kind of goes with everything in life. And now that we've had a little bit of time to process everything, I can say that this season was an absolute blast. And I think most of our expectations were exceeded. And there's just this new energy. And I even felt it watching the games on TV. I was more engaged. You could tell the fans are more engaged. Social media was more engaged. The videos had a different tone. And again, I'm just so incredibly proud of this team. And I'm as proud as I've ever been to be a South Carolina Gamecock and a fan of this program. And so with that being said, also, for all those who have listened this season, I want to thank you. And I believe that just like our football team, this podcast has limitless potential. And I do believe we are on the right path and going places. And so speaking of going places, my last 6-pack of picks, championship game edition, of course, we're going to do a pick for bowl games, but this is a six-pack here. So real quick, and then we'll wrap this up. ACC, Pitt and Wake Forest. Give me Wake Forest plus 3. That game is at 8 p.m. Big Ten, Michigan versus Iowa, over 43.5, also at 8 p.m. I think Michigan scores a good amount of points. Iowa gets it over. Big 12, give me Baylor versus Oklahoma State, under 46.5. I was Big 12 over all year. Flipping it up. I need an opposite, need new energy with my six-pack. Pac-12, Southern Cal versus Cal, over 57.5. That game is at 11. SEC, Alabama versus Georgia, powerhouse matchup here. Give me Georgia minus 6.5. I just think they're too much. I think Bama thinner than they have been. In group of five, how can you not touch the Cincinnati game here? Houston, I'm going Houston plus 10.5 versus Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati gets it done, but I think it's closer. And you know what? Real quick here, how can we not talk about the absolute bananasville that is the coaching carousel? Billy Napier to Florida. We talked about that. Lincoln Riley to USC. We talked about that. But then the big news was Brian Kelly to LSU. So who in the hell takes the Oklahoma job and the Notre Dame job? I have no clue. There are people who are like, oh, they better not come after our boy. Look, I had a brief moment of what if, but he's home. He's home. I promise you that. And so it's going to be really interesting to see who takes those jobs. Luke Fickle's a hot name. The DC at Georgia's a hot name. It's going to be very interesting to see. And this is a testament to just how crazy and competitive college football is. And so with that, that wraps up this episode. Please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is Cox Talking Gamecocks. And please like and subscribe to the pod. If you are able to leave a review of any kind, please do. I appreciate y'all. Love y'all. Let's go, Cox.